my Lord, you can also see that all the material occupants of this world are certainly separated from their possessor at death. Therefore, if the Brahmana Vamanadi is not satisfied by whatever gifts one has given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? So, of course, it is Bali Maharaj speaking to Sri Kacharya. Purport. The word Vipra means Brahmana, and at the same time, confidential. Bali Maharaj had confidentially decided to give the gift to Lord Vamanadeva without discussion. But because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the Asuras and his spiritual master, Sri Kacharya, he spoke equivocally. Bali Maharaj, as a pure devotee, had already decided to give all the land to Vishnu. Translation again. My Lord, that refers to Sri Kacharya, you can also see that all the material opulences of this world are certainly separated from their possessor at death. Therefore, if the Brahmana Vamanade is not satisfied by whatever gifts one has given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? Om again,
please don't think that these
think of the attachment you would have if you ran the whole universe, you control the whole universe. Just think of, you know, the powers of attachment. We get so attached just by having a few material possessions. We get so attached by having a few persons sometimes doing what we ask. But suppose you control the whole universe. Just think how big your attachment would be. Sometimes we think, we calculate, you know, how much would I have to give up if I truly surrender to Krishna? How much would I lose? We actually don't have very much at all. But Bodhi Maharaj possessed the whole universe, but he gave it up immediately. Of attraction for Lord Vamana. Now, we're going to deal with two points. One is calculation in devotional service, and the other is spontaneous attraction. Bali Maharaj is apparently calculating in this verse. He's saying to Shukracharya, okay, first of all, whatever material I have, all those possessions I'm going to lose at the time of death. So if this Brahmana boy, Vamanadev, wants what I'm going to lose anyway, why not give it to him? It's calculation. Just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you are all attached to logic and reason, just apply it to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you'll find that it's unfathomable. So that's an invitation. You want to be analytical in a scholarly way. You want to exercise your powers of logic and reason and analysis and calculation. How much here, how much there? How much will I get? How much will I lose? Apply that to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. You'll see by your calculations that there's no one more munificent, more charitable than Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Therefore, Rupa Goswami has written, Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradaya. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gurta Sayama. Let's offer our obeisances unto the most charitable person, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more merciful than even Krishna himself, because he's giving what not even Krishna freely gives, pure love of Krishna. Now, although Bali Maharaj is making these calculating statements, and you're going to hear more of them in the coming verses, he's going to cite historical evidence to Shukracharya. What's so big about even giving up your own life for the right purpose? It's been done before. Dadichi did it. Maharaj Shibhi did it. So it's not that we have no historical precedent for this. Just like in court, a lawyer seeks to establish legal precedence. Your Honor, in a previous case, it was decided such and such by the high courts. Therefore, so Bali Maharaj is doing the same thing, because whenever someone knowledgeable in Vedic knowledge speaks, he or she always quotes from Shastra. Once when Prabhupada was in Germany, he was speaking to all the devotees, and he would make a point and then quote a verse. Make some more points and quote a verse. Actually, when it came time to quote the verse, he would say, what is that verse in Bhagavad Gita that makes this point? And no one would reply, only this one Mataji. At least 20 times she came up with the verse that Prabhupada was referring to. And Prabhupada was very pleased. Everyone else was kind of blank-faced. Prabhupada said, what is that verse? What's the shloka that supports this point in Bhagavad Gita? Everyone gives blank faces, but this Mataji, she had it down. She, like 20 times in a row, she had the verse, she recited the verse in Sanskrit, the Prabhupada was referring to, and he was very pleased. And then he said, This is the proper way to present Krishna consciousness. You make a point, and then you quote from Shastra. You make some more points, you quote from Shastra. That means you're authenticating. Indeed, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this is austerity of the tongue. Anudvega kayam vakyam satyam kriyatam cha svatya vyasalam chayava vanayam sapa uchyate. The austerity of the tongue is to speak pleasing words, not biting words that cause pain. Don't use your tongue to agitate someone's mind. And speak in a way that's beneficial to everyone. And always authenticate your statements by quotations from the Shastra. That is austerity of the tongue. If you can master the tongue, then all the other senses are easy to master. That is the Krishna consciousness process. Enlightenment, self-realization begins with the tongue. Seva Mukhi Jivara, Swayamiva Sprachita, Padma Purana says. If you can properly engage your tongue in devotional service, then you'll find it very easy to deal with all your other senses. So if you're having a little trouble in spiritual life, if things are going a bit slow, simply watch what your tongue is doing and increase the absorption of your tongue in Krishna's service. And you'll see a big change. So, apparently, Bali Maharaj is calculating, as we said. He's going to say, why not give to the drama? I wasn't going to lose anyway. Isn't that smart business then? You want something out of me? So I think, well, what can I give that won't be a great loss? Suppose, let's say, someone came to me and said, we see you have some nice cookies in your room. Can we have one? And then I'll think, well, actually, I know that I've got too many cookies now and I can eat today. And by tomorrow, they'll be stale. Yeah, take some cookies. That's calculated. Sure, I'm always ready to give you everything I have. Just take the cookie. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I can't eat all these cookies today, and by tomorrow they'll be stale, so better get them away anyway. That way I get reputation for being a charitable person. So the Balaram is presenting this kind of motivation to Shukracharya. What if the Brahmana, Brahmanadevi, wants so much? And he's not satisfied just by a little bit. He wants everything. Even if he wants the whole universe. Let him have it. Because in the time of death, you lose it all anyway. That was calculation. But that's not really where Bali Maharaj is at. He's on the platform of love. But he's not going to speak about prema, pure love, to Shukracharya, who's a creature of the material world. Material world means gain and loss. Profit and loss. So that's not where Bali Maharaj is at. But being an expert, shrewd person, he knows how to deal with the kind of persons that surround him. He's surrounded by demons. He's surrounded by a materialistic, spiritual manifest stuff. Therefore, he's preaching according to time, according to circumstance. And then he bulletproofs his point by saying, don't try to show that this has never been done before. I shall present to you Vedic evidence that great personalities have given up everything in the past. Then furthermore, he'll say, if you get a chance to give charity to a very respectable person, that's a rare opportunity. Certainly, it's not easy to get an opportunity to die on the battlefield in the right kind of war, go to the heavenly planets. But even rarer is the opportunity to give charity to a suitable person. So if that is so, I must do it. Especially because More important than all your wealth that you give away is your reputation. So, you're going to lose everything at the time of death, but your reputation will go on. Therefore, why don't I act for reputation? That's the intelligent thing. Why should I act for wealth when wealth will be lost? But reputation will continue on. He's presenting all these materialistic reasons to Shukracharya. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses material incentive to talk to Arjuna, but these are supplementary. That is Krishna's way of speaking about how a proper society should be organized in terms of duty and obligation. He tells Arjuna, happy are those Kshatriyas who a fighting opportunity comes unsought, the doorway to heaven, to the heavenly planet swings open. He speaks about honor. Don't think that if you run away from this battle, everyone will think how wonderful a character you are. No, they'll all mock you, they'll all look down on you. And for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. These are not spiritual motivations, but Krishna speaking of them. Of course, what is Krishna's main way of motivating Arjuna? Fight and think of me. You're my devotee. Your desire is meant to be dovetailed with my desire. That's the real conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. So, Bali Maharaj, when he saw Lord Vamadeva, the mercy, the kripa that he got from his grandfather, Kalam Maharaj, was activated, and he assumed his status as a pure devotee of the Lord. That means he's attracted to Lord Vamadeva not because of a business deal. Okay, I give him what I'm going to lose anyway. I get a good reputation. I get the heavenly planets. I perpetuate the fame of my family line that always gave munificently to the Brahmanas. No, actually, he's attracted out of love because Krishna is all attractive. Bali Maharaj's heart is open and he just wants to render all the service he can at Krishna's lotus feet. Therefore, in Bhaktir Samrita Sindhu, in Nectar Devotion, you'll see that Bali Maharaj is given as an example of someone who surrenders everything, Atma Devadam. He didn't do it as a calculation. He did it out of love. But he can't speak about love, pure love, to the kind of audience that surrounds him. Everybody wants that kind of love. But you don't get that kind of love in the material world. In the material world, everything is limited. Your heart longs for love that just expands. Everyone likes that feeling in your heart when your heart just expands and expands and expands. At least, that's your hope. You dream about it, but it never happens in reality. Because you're operating in the prakriti-sthani, in the oppressive material atmosphere. How does the material atmosphere oppress you? It limits and conditions the expression of your loving propensity. And that's why we are frustrated. Our hearts can't truly rejoice. When the heart expands without restriction, love and love and more love, then you are happy. But you can't do that in the material world. There's always some circumstance. There's always some condition that prevents your heart's energy from expanding, and therefore you become frustrated and lament. This desire for unrestricted, unbounded love puts a huge burden on the other person, or the other persons. Man looks to woman, you are going to fulfill my aching heart. You are going to give me all the attention I never got. You're going to give me all the worship, all the puja that I haven't gotten. You will do it for me. You're going to understand me. You're going to notice my every thought. You. And then the woman looks at the man, you're going to get me all the things I want. Whatever emotion I have, you're going to know it even before I feel it. You're always going to want to talk to me, no matter what time, no matter what situation. This is going to be you, you, you. So both sides are hoping for this unrestricted love. And what do you find instead? Conditions, restrictions. Yes, yes, but. You just can't break into the clear skies of unbounded love. There's always a low ceiling of clouds. And so there's a fog. The fog blows in, you know. That's the way it is in the material world. So, especially in devotee relationships, one has to understand that material expectations cannot be fully fulfilled. There is something, but not full satisfaction. But on the spiritual platform, there is room for unlimited expansion. That's why our hearts truly become happy in Krishna consciousness, because you can relate to Krishna without impediment. Krishna's ready for that kind of love. He can handle it. No one else can handle it. Krishna can handle your loving propensity easily and unlimitedly. Therefore, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you repose all your desires in Krishna, he can handle it. Now just try reposing all your desires into some ordinary person. What happens? You become disappointed. I gave you everything. Why can't you? It's just okay. And sometimes you plead with the other person. I did so much for you, and now look how you're treating me. I sacrificed so much for you. Everyone can bring out their long list of what I did for the other person. I tolerated when you were angry. You don't remember. Because you feel shortchanged. You know, you go to the shop and you buy something and you pay and you wait and then you get your change and you go out of the shop, you look and you didn't give me enough back. It's not a good feeling. And people feel that in their relationships. They get angry. You're shortchanging me. I wanted unbounded love from you. One popular buzzword amongst out in the world is unconditional love. When Nectar Devotion came out in the 70s, devotees were the only ones who used that phrase, unconditional love. But now it's a popular new age buzzword, unconditional love. They talk about it in lots of seminars and new age magazines. But the fact is, no one can show it. No one can give it. How can conditioned souls give unconditional love? The very nature of conditioned life means you're bound by conditions. So you must give conditioned love. And that doesn't satisfy the heart. It's always a calculation. The Bali Maharaj is beyond all calculation. Because of the Kripa Siddha, the perfection of mercy, he's able to react towards Lord Amadev in pure love. Take whatever I have. Take the whole universe. Later you'll find out that when Lord Amadev doesn't have any place for his third step, because with two steps he's covered the whole universe, Bali Maharaj will say, well then put your third step on my head, because the possessor of the wealth must be greater than the wealth. I've surrendered the wealth, now surrender myself too. This is Bali Maharaj. And for this, he's glorified. As a Mahajan, one of the 12 Dharatis in devotional service. Sometimes Krishna can act like he doesn't want your love, in order to increase your love. Krishna is expert and how to provoke the best, unlimited, loving affairs. You know that when Krishna's consorts ran to the forest to meet him in the middle of the night, hearing his flute, you see, Krishna had stolen their minds. So they ran to the forest to capture the thief who had stolen their minds and beg for their stolen property back. So Krishna was waiting there. And you know how Krishna first started speaking to them very officially. "Oh, it's very nice that you're here in the middle of the forest in the middle of the night. Can you please tell me why you're here?" So at first, the gopis, they were smiling, "Oh, Ah Krishna, he's speaking these words, double words. We know he knows why we're here." But then Krishna went on speaking in this kind of way. "It's not very good that you're here. Doesn't look very good. It's not good for your family life. The forest is dangerous." So gradually the point began to sink home that the gopis said, "Krishna doesn't want us." Then Krishna began to lecture them about the duties and responsibilities of ladies at home. So the first and foremost responsibility is to be chaste, to take care of the children, to take care of the husband. That is the top religious principle for ladies. So now that you understand that, you please go home. The gopis, they were very disturbed. You can tell by their physical mannerisms how disturbed they were. The Bhagavatam presents a very poetic description of their physical characteristics. Because by physical characteristics, often you can judge the mind. Not always, but often. I know in a case, there was a picture of Srila Prabhupada, and one devotee thought that Prabhupada looked sad. So he asked Prabhupada about that picture, "Why are you looking sad in this picture?" And Prabhupada looked at him, "Oh, you do not know? This was transcendental ecstasy." So, of course, these sages said, we cannot, even the greatest scholar can understand the behavior of a great devotee of the Lord. So, the physical description of the gopis was very heartbreaking. As they heard Krishna drive home his conclusion that they should leave, go back to the village, their breathing became very hot, and their lips were drying up. And they were looking down at the ground, scratching the ground with their toenails. That meant they were very distressed, very disturbed. What they were hearing was becoming unbearable. What were they thinking? Were they thinking of their own sense gratification? No. They never thought of their own sense gratification. They're always thinking of Krishna's pleasure. That is pure devotional service. They were thinking, "What is this? Our love must not be genuine because Krishna doesn't want it. Our love must be faulty. What's the use in living if Krishna doesn't want our love? Oh no, it sounds like our love is unappealing to him." They accepted the fault. At the same time, because they were bound to Krishna and couldn't live without Krishna, they had to say something. So they began to speak to Krishna, carefully trying to control their anger. But that anger is not mundane anger. That anger is in pure love of Krishna. Whatever they did, it was for Krishna's pleasure. This is a harder point to understand, how they could be angry and that would be for Krishna's pleasure. So they began to speak to Krishna, controlling their anger, their voices quivering. You know, when you're very emotional and your voice starts to shake. So they were speaking like that to Krishna. And they replied to his points. They said, "Okay, you've been lecturing us about the home duties of a woman and how we should look after our husband, look after our children. But guess what? You are the soul of all the husbands and all the children. You're the super soul. Therefore, by satisfying you, we satisfy the husband and the children. You are the self of everyone's self. So all we have to do is serve you. And it automatically we've done our duties to our husband and children. Of course, the Shastra says, Devarshi Bhutta Ninam Prachinam. One who serves Krishna is no longer a debtor to the demigods, to the sages, to the ordinary living entities like animals that you depend on, cows for milk and so forth, to your relatives, to your family, to your ancestors, all debts finished by serving Krishna. So, certainly the devotees are justified in saying that. You are the root of everything. You are the super soul in everyone's heart. If we serve you, then we've done our duty towards our husband and children. Only because of your presence in their bodies do their bodies have life. In that way, they presented themselves to Krishna. And if you insist that we go back to the village, even if that is the correct thing to do, listen to this. Our feet cannot move from this place. We have lost all power to move away from you. We're totally transfixed by your beauty. We can't move. We can't go home. Not possible. So that is the nature of pure love. Now, even while they were speaking like that to Krishna with anger and love, they never for a moment gave up on Krishna. They never for a moment entertained the thought of withdrawing their love. That is unconditional love. Now, you all know that with your dearly beloveds or whatever, someone who you have some deep relationship with, if there's some discrepancy, what goes through your mind? It's getting a bit too much tolerance. We'll see. I'll try it a bit longer and see what happens. But in your mind, you're thinking, this has got to change otherwise. The gopis never even thought that, what to speak of doing it. Of course, our Krishna conscious Bhakta, they may think about doing it, but they never do it. The gopis wouldn't even think that way. They never in their minds relinquished Krishna. So even though they were speaking with controlled anger to them, they never thought to give up on Krishna in any way. That is pure love. Without calculation. And Krishna, as you know, would become impressed by their presentation. And he would fulfill their desires, because their desires are simply for Krishna's pleasure. They're just thinking, if we cannot satisfy Krishna, who can? What's Krishna going to do? What's going to happen to his senses without us? They're thinking simply of Krishna's benefit. It's hard to understand, but that is the platform of pure love beyond calculation. Any questions? Just like the rivers meet in the ocean, similarly, whether it's Guru Kripa or Sadhana Kripa, once you're in the ocean of Kripa, it's all. Once you're in the ocean of Siddha, it's all perfection. No matter how you got there, it's all perfection. The fact is, we're all operating with a bit of Kripa because ordinarily we should not be able to approach Krishna's loving devotional service. Because of Lord Chaitanya, Kripa Sindhu, the ocean of mercy, we're allowed to perform devotional service. Otherwise, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Marishana Sahasrayasu Kastinasitane Yatata Apisitanam Kastinvamedita. So many persons are striving for perfection. Few have achieved it. Of the few who have achieved perfection, even fewer know me in truth. Only one may know me in truth. So how do we get into that category of the one who knows Krishna in truth? Kastin mam vedi tattata. Because of Lord Chaitanya. So everyone in the age of Kali is operating with a bit of kripa, a bit of special mercy. Once you get to the ocean of Siddha, perfection, just like once the rivers get into the ocean, you don't go into the middle of the Tasmanian Sea and start calculating this water came from such and such river in Melbourne, this one came from a river, this water came from a river in New Zealand, this water came from a river in Tasmania. No, once it's in the Tasman Sea, it's all part of the Tasman Sea. So similarly, no matter what avenue of Siddha that you take, once you're in the ocean of Siddha, you're there. Siddha is Siddha. But just for the purpose of exciting analysis, Nectar Devotion describes the different paths of Siddha that may bring you to the ocean of Siddha. Sometimes they overlap a bit. Prahlad Maharaj is both described as Nitya Siddha, eternally perfect, and as part Nitya Siddha and part Sadhana Siddha. So, you can get into these details very deeply. Anything else? Yes.
Do you think Krishna takes offense at all, like any difficulties in their devotional service, or in their minds when they think, oh, Krishna, why are you doing this?
Just like a little child may hit out the parent sometimes. The parent knows this is just a little child, but we should grow up. Balimar, no, who is Indra? Indra begged forgiveness of Krishna after the Govardhan Leela. He said, just like you tolerate a little child, similarly you should tolerate me. Indra was very skillful. He said to the Lord, I deserve punishment. Punish me as you like, but please forgive me. That was his prayer. I deserve to be punished completely, but you're merciful. Please forgive me. And what did Lord Brahma pray after the Brahma bewilderment of Leela? The bewilderment of Lord Brahma. He prayed to the Lord that just like a mother doesn't take it seriously when the child in her womb kicks, similarly, we're all within your abdomen. Your abdomen contains everything. From your abdomen, the lotus flower sprouts. So, don't take it seriously that I made this little error. See, Brahma, he thought he was only taking the cowherd boys away for a few moments. He did. It was a few seconds before he realized, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Tampering with Krishna's pastimes. He brought the cowherd boys back. It just happened to be 1 year, the first time. So, yes, you may think like that. Krishna, why are you doing this to me? But that's why it's very necessary for us to read Srila Prabhupada's books. They keep us in the proper devotional attitude. They purify our intelligence. You may notice that devotees who do not properly dedicate themselves to reading Prabhupada's books they can easily be overrun by the wrong mentality. When you read the purports, you find that a devotee accepts whatever Krishna sends as his mercy. And you have to pray to Krishna to get that ability. It requires work. You've got to work on yourself. So we may be little children, but the little children have to grow up. Grow up and learn what are the responsibilities of pure love. That is Krishna consciousness. Of course, on the spontaneous platform of devotional service, on Radha Marga, you can chastise Krishna. Krishna, why did you do this? But that's on the platform of pure love. The gopis, while controlling their anger and speaking to Krishna, they're ultimately going to say, what woman in all the three worlds, seeing your beauty, would not fail to be attracted? How can you blame us? Name a woman in the material world, in the spiritual world, find one who would not be able to be attracted to you. How can you blame us? But they never, while saying these, they never thought, we're giving up Krishna. Never did they think like that. That's the difference. But when we calculate in our business-like approach to bhakti, Krishna, this is, I think this is a bit too much here. I, the great me, surrendered to devotional service 2 years ago. And I've been doing a lot of service since then. I have been going out on Sankirtan. I have been living in the association of devotees. Or I've been trying to live a proper grihastha life in my home. I've done all these things for you, Krishna. Yet, you're sending these circumstances which I cannot understand. Krishna, if you know what's good for you, you'll do things my way. Then my service will be better. My service has to be much better if you just do things my way. It's being your self-interest, Krishna, to do things my way, because then I'm enthusiastic in bhakti, you see. This is the patient prescribing medicine, telling the doctor. You can imagine, you're sick, you go to the doctor, and you tell the doctor, this is what you should give me. If you're a good doctor, you'll give me pleasant medicine. That doesn't make any sense. That's the amazing thing about Krishna consciousness. The more you spend time advancing in Krishna service, you can just look back on your mentality of just 1 year ago, and you're thinking, oh, how did I ever think that? Just look at the preceding year, and you're amazed. How did those thoughts come to my mind? How did I have those attitudes? This is the great opulence of bhakti. You can't do that as a non-devotee. Just look at your preceding year, and you're just amazed at, how did I think that? You can do that in Krishna service because there's advancement, there's progress. That is the wealth of devotional service.
Hare Krishna,